Hello, and welcome to episode 49 of the Blue Cup Tools podcast. I am Francisco Gonzalez, also known as Grundislav, and with me as always...
Hello, I am Ben Chandler, also known as Ben304. How are you, Francisco?
I am doing well, Ben. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good.
Very well.
I'm glad to hear it.
It's been a weird week. It's been cold and I'm not used to the cold. It's been weird. Like one morning I got up at about 5:30 and I went for a walk before the sun came up and it was nice and warm. And then like this morning it was just freezing cold at like 6 o'clock. I went and got a glass of water and it was like ice to drink.
Wow. So,
and people always say like, oh, if you talk about the weather, that's boring. It's like the lowest form of conversation. But no, because I like going for walks, you know. So the weather to me is like, if it's a beautiful day, I really enjoy my walk.
Yeah, I disagree. You know? I think talking about the weather can sometimes be good. I mean, if you're using it as just filler for conversation, sure. But
an outside person that likes going for a hike or, you know,
go
out for a swim or something like that, the weather's really important. So yeah, no, it's been kind of weird, but I've been enjoying it anyway.
Good.
And, you know. I've had a busy week. I haven't had much time to myself this week.
I see.
So I've been going out and about. But anyway, how are you? What have you been up to?
I've been up to a few things. It's been hot here, so I've been sort of trying to stay indoors. But
in the cool, in the shade.
Yeah, in the cool, in the shade, with my air conditioning on. I've done a little bit of coding for my game, which is quite appropriate for the podcast topic today.
It is appropriate.
It is. I wonder what it could be.
Don't be silly.
But aside from that,
don't be coy.
I like being coy. I'm the most Japanese fish of them all. Blub blub blub.
I've forgotten that I made that joke like 3 days ago.
I know.
My memory's really failing me lately.
I'm worried, Chandler. You used to have a really good memory for things.
I think all the lack of sleep that it cost me to get where I am now,
maybe
just took its toll.
Probably.
Like I'm gonna get to feel like I can't, man. This is really telling. I put on my PlayStation 3 to play some Skate 3 while we do the podcast.
Of course.
And I put my TV on and then I was looking around looking for my TV remote, going, where's my TV remote? I haven't seen it in a couple of days, forgetting that I just put the TV on and
wow.
It was sitting right next to my laptop. Like, I'm seriously losing my memory.
Wow.
It's getting bad. Getting bad.
Wow.
But that's okay. I can remember important things like, you know, like DOS games and you know, the important stuff in life. Anyway, sorry, you were saying I've interrupted.
I don't know whether to be pleased or saddened by that statement, but oh well.
I don't lie about who I am.
As long as you remember to like put your pants on before you leave the house.
Oh, who needs pants?
Well, if it's cold outside.
I'm wearing pants at the moment. I'm in my pajama pants and my robe. It's cold.
We don't need to know those details, Chandler.
Look.
This may be a friendly podcast, but it's not that friendly.
Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry, children and women who are of a sensitive disposition, and men.
Yes.
Let's face it, you know. It's a modern world. Everyone's equally offended these days, so
yeah.
I'm sorry.
Well, we're equal opportunity offenders on this podcast,
yeah,
so it doesn't matter.
We don't care who you are.
Yeah, we don't care who you are. Screw you. Here, look at my butt. Wiggle, wiggle. Anyway. I was pretty much done. I haven't really done anything else. I haven't played any games or anything.
Really?
No, I started recording some commentary. That's about the most interesting thing I've done. And I tried unsuccessfully to sell my car, but that's about the extent of what I've been up to all week.
Your television interview for A Golden Wake's now online. Can you tell our listeners where to get it? Have you got
Can
you link it in the thread or something?
I forgot
people can
about that.
Check it out.
I guess I could probably do that. But if you haven't already seen it on Twitter and me pimping it all over the place, yeah, my interview that I did a couple of weeks ago when I was down in Miami on Coral Gables TV is now up. If you go on YouTube, you can probably search for Coral Gables TV, A Golden Wake, and it'll come up and you can see me saying pretty much the same thing I've been saying everywhere else. You know what I thought was hilarious about that interview though?
Tell me.
I don't
oh,
know
you,
you
did tell me,
I
but
did
tell
you,
again.
But I'll tell you again.
I already know the answer to this, but I'm not going to spoil it.
Well, in between the interview, they cut to live footage of Coral Gables, as I mentioned, you know, places where the game took place, and they also interspersed it with clips from the trailer. But they also interspersed it with clips from the preview build that they played, and it's painfully obvious that they didn't get past the prologue of the game, which is set in New York. So it's like, oh, look, this game's in Coral Gables, cut to clips of snowy New York, which I find amusing.
Has it snowed in Miami since the day you were born?
It snowed in Miami the day I was born, right. 4 years before I was born.
Oh, I see. I thought it was the day you were born. I thought it was like some miracle of Christmas or something.
No.
Despite the fact that you're born in January and not December.
Yeah, exactly. It snowed on the day I was born in 1976, but I wasn't born until that day in 1982. Oh. That's the only time it snowed in Miami. But it...
Man, I was recently thinking about the film The Spirit of 76. Oh, how weird is that?
I don't know.
Have you seen that film?
I haven't, no. But I did watch Beetlejuice last night.
Yes, you did. And I have it sitting on my pile.
Yeah, you should watch
it. I got even more films this week. I got Fargo in the mail, which you recommended to me.
Oh, yeah, Fargo's a great one. Man, you know what? You know what's funny about Beetlejuice is that I saw Beetlejuice, I think when I was, for the first time, I think I saw it when I was about 8 years old or so. Maybe younger, because the movie came out in 1988. So I probably saw it like the year after, like, when it was out on video or whatever.
When I was 2 years old.
Yeah.
Or one.
I was about six or seven. So, it scared me when I was a kid. Because, I mean, even though it's a funny movie and it's very silly, it has some things that are some images that would frighten a young child, I'm sure. And it did. But what was weird was that they had made an animated series. And the animated series is completely different in tone to the movie. So I had watched the cartoon, and I saw that Richard Goodness tweeted about it last night. Like, I had seen the cartoon before I saw the movie, so, like, coming into the movie, having seen the cartoon, was just, like, really bizarre. And they made a really terrible Nintendo video game about Beetlejuice.
Did they? You mean, like, original Nintendo?
Yeah, NES.
Right.
It was Beetlejuice. Yeah. It was a licensed game, and you played as Beetlejuice, and it was awful. Like,
How did they do the stripy pants on, like, the tiny little resolution?
Oh, man, the sprite is awful. But then the weird thing about the game is that it's notoriously difficult, and also it doesn't make much sense.
Well, it's an NES game.
Well, yes, I know. But then the weird thing is, like, I saw a playthrough of it that someone did, or maybe it was an Angry Video Game Nerd review or something. But there's, like, the main levels are, like, side-scroll. It's a side-scroller, basically, in most of it. And then you have to buy, like, different masks, which are scares or something. But then the main part of the gameplay is, like, you go into this house, and it's, like, the top-down perspective in the house, and there's these floating doors chasing you around. And if you get hit by the floating doors, you lose.
Okay, well, I haven't seen the film, but that sounds incredibly bizarre.
It is bizarre, and it has nothing to do with the film. That's the thing.
Floating doors randomly in the...
Yes!
Well, I suppose you have to put some sort of opposition in there.
I guess, but... floating door. Yeah, but I don't know. And the funny thing, too, that I realized, like, after watching the movie last night, despite the fact that, like, Michael Keaton, it gets top billing for being Beetlejuice. Oh, you're going to have... It still blows my mind that it's Michael Keaton as Beetlejuice. And now that you've seen Batman and you've actually seen Michael Keaton...
Well, I'd seen Batman before, but it had been several years. Well, sure. I say several years. We're talking, like, 15 years.
Oh, yeah. I hadn't seen Beetlejuice in, like, 20 years. But
yeah, there you go.
But yeah, it was just like seeing Michael Keaton as Beetlejuice is hilarious. And like I said, now that you've seen him in Batman, it's a completely different character. But
he was a kind of like endearingly goofy Batman, you know, not like 60s yeah. goofy, but oh, like yeah. not like I'm Batman, you know.
Yeah.
So he was like this endearing kind of awkward, like the whole scene when Joker comes to whatever her name is apartment.
And
the whole playoff there, it's endearing to me.
Okay. Well, anyway...
is it Vicky Vance?
Vicky Vale.
Vicky Vale.
Yeah. Anyway, despite the fact that he gets top billing on the cover and, you know, the movie is called Beetlejuice, in the whole hour and a half, he, I think, gets about maybe 12, maybe 15 minutes of screen time total, which is...
Is that right? Well, I suppose I suppose you don't want, you know.
Well, to be fair,
save it for when it's worth it.
Exactly. And to be fair, once you see the movie and once you see his character, I think you'll understand why less is definitely more. Because he's,
well, I look forward to it.
He's pretty obnoxious, but anyway, yes, it's a good movie. Yeah. So,
oh man, do you know what else film I got? What else film? Do you know what other film I got in the mail?
What other film?
Today, just today, I got another Wes Anderson film.
Ooh, which one?
The Life Aquatic.
Oh, I see.
You sound so disappointed.
I'm not. I didn't find it as amazing as everyone else did. That's all. It's not okay. It's not a bad film by any stretch of the imagination.
I like underwater stuff, so you know it's.
Yeah, sure.
It was a no brainer for me when someone, I think it was Ilyich, told me that there was a Wes Anderson film underwater. I'm like, well, it's the director that everyone raves about to me. You told me that like he's this kind of like sort of alternative director, and it seems like everyone that sees his films really likes them. So you know,
I think that I don't know. They seem to have. They're very divisive, I think. Because, I mean,
fair enough.
I love two of his movies, and I detest one of them, and I didn't even bother seeing others because I was like, okay, I don't need to see this anymore. And I'm completely meh right in the middle on Life Aquatic, so...
Okay. So when anyway, but yeah, so that's what I got today. So that's another one for the collection.
Now that you're watching films, this is great, because now we can talk about other things besides video games on the Blue Cup Tools podcast. Isn't that exciting?
Yeah, and we could talk about music, but you haven't listened to new music since, like, 1989 or whatever.
That's so not true. You shut your white mouth.
What albums have you bought lately? Do you want me to go through mine? There's, like, 10 of them in the last 2 weeks.
I don't buy albums anymore. The last album I bought was The Raven that refused to sing.
That was 2 years ago.
That was two years ago.
It was a year and a half. It was a year and a half.
Yeah, that's true. It was a year and a half ago.
I still listen to it. I have it on on my walking playlist. I have that.
Good.
I had Drive Home when I went for a walk. Man, I went for a beautiful walk today.
Good.
I had Drive Home playing in my ears. That's such a great song. A great album.
It is.
I've
been listening to music while the past couple of days. My old Apple earbuds got kind of, they're on their way out, so I was very graciously gifted a new pair of earbuds, and so so I've been using those to listen to music, which is nice.
Do you know what I've been listening to? Do you know what a nice little bit of I guess synchronicity happened recently? I took over the Blue Cup Tools Twitter account to spam about DOS games, basically.
Took over is putting it lightly. Hijacked! Hijacked!
Yeah.
Hijacked nerdily.
And
What's hilarious, though? You know what's hilarious? You hijacked the account and you posted pictures of DOS games, and we got 6 new followers in like 2 hours. It was amazing.
People love the DOS games, man.
Clearly. I'm gonna have to post more things about DOS games on my Twitter account.
You're gonna have to get in on this because we love them.
I'm not that desperate for followers.
Neither am I. Just despite, like talking about DOS
despite
games.
Only being 3 away from 1,000, please follow me.
But yeah, so one of the screenshots I posted was from Archimedean Dynasty, which you very kindly gifted me last year.
Oh yeah, sure.
Great. And Chris Olsen, who we know and love as one of our listeners,
yes, our pilot
said,
friend.
Oh man, I've forgotten how great this game is. I'd love to see what the UMD is, it's upper memory UMB upper memory
UMB,
block
yes.
podcast guy has to say about it.
Yes.
So I went, hey, another podcast, if he likes games like this, I need to check out his podcast. So I've been listening to the Upper Memory Block podcast, which is great. I listened to the Warcraft one today while I was working, and also the Another World one, or Out of This World for you Americans, and I think Canadians. And it's great, and it was kind of funny because when I was listening to the Another World one, I heard a voice message recorded by Chris Lapine on there, and I was like, oh, hey.
Oh.
It's Chris.
Man.
I miss that.
Yeah, I miss Chris, too.
Do you know what's...
Go ahead.
You know what's kind of funny? I think Chris still listens to our podcast. So, Chris,
yes.
If you're still listening, I got to say, visitnewdetroit.com is still my homepage. So every time I open up Firefox, I'm like, oh, it's Chris.
You know.
So yeah, that's my little bit of sweet sentiment there in the podcast. Now on, I'm going to be bitter and horrible.
Okay, well, my shout out to Chris is, Chris, you confused me when you changed your Twitter name because I thought, oh no, he's gone. But then he's still there. He just has a different name now.
I actually heard from Chris recently because he's doing the Blackwell Deception iOS.
Good.
So I need to do a little bit of UI graphics for him. So he sent me a little email. So it's always nice to hear from Chris.
Yeah.
And we can't wait to have him back in our lives, in our internet lives daily.
Yes, yes. I'm going to start listening to the UMB podcast myself, actually, but I'm going to start from episode one because episode one is about Sam and Max. And I was looking through all the games
and I was like, I gotta listen to that.
Yeah, this guy covers a lot of adventure games, so that's pretty cool. I mean, episode two is Wing Commander, which made me even more excited, too. So I was just like, man, I'm in for some treats here.
Man, there's such good games.
Sorry, I get excited.
I can't believe that I've never heard that song until last year.
That's the thing. Like, all my life I've been playing Wing Commander silently because I was never able... I have it on this double disc thing with Ultima 7, which, by the way, I've never been able to get Ultima 7 running. It always...
Well, you can get Ultima 7 for, like, $1.50 when it's on sale on GOG or something, man.
Why would I want to get it for $1.50 when I have a perfectly good working copy of my CD that I've owned since 1991? Well, I got that CD with my single-speed external CD-ROM drive back in 1991. External CD-ROM, okay? I remember playing it. I remember that thing broke and the wires were coming out, and I used to have to, like, take the black wire and the red wire and strip them and put them together so that it would read my CDs. And then I would hear it go, and when it did that, I knew that it had read the CD, because if it went, then it didn't read the CD.
Man, that sounds like my computer when I was, like, 16 years old, and I had my very own computer, and it was like all bits because I'd fiddled with it, and there was, like, you know, my mates and I had, like, just rebuilt bits for it. And I remember taking it to someone's house, and it was, like, in three separate parts, and we were having, like, a StarCraft LAN, and he's like, is this even gonna start up? I'm like, dude, just you play on your fancy laptop. I'll get the Millennium Falcon working. That's what I used to call it.
Oh my god, what a nerd.
Man, I remember lugging my huge CRT monitor around every time we wanted to play StarCraft together.
I saw a prank a while back where a bunch of people, like, brought a bunch of giant CRT monitors and towers to cafes, like, instead of laptops. It was pretty funny.
That's excellent.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
But anyway, going back to what I was saying, yes, Wing Commander.
Sorry.
No, it's fine. Wing Commander, I used to play it all the time, but yeah, I since it was on the CD, for some reason the CD had, like, an install program, but it never worked, so I used to have to play it directly off the CD.
And you couldn't save either, could you?
Yeah, no, I couldn't save. So I always had to play from the beginning, and I never had the music, until recently when I looked online and I found a way, I don't even remember how, but yeah, so I finally was able to hear the music, and it's amazing, so I'm making up for the, you know, 20... plus years of playing Wing Commander silently by getting really excited about the music, and it's really cool.
That's weird for me because the music's always been, like, an integral part of the experience of Wing Commander for me, so you know.
I played it as a silent film for many years, and now it's kind of like I remember when I got my first sound card and I had been playing King's Quest IV with PC speaker, and then it was like, oh, here's your ad lib, and it was like amazing. It was like a full orchestra.
I still haven't played The Secret of Monkey Island with anything but PC speaker. I keep putting it off because I'm worried. I've got the CD version.
Oh, man.
I'm just worried, like, that'll ruin everything for me. Because I love those old PC speaker tunes.
Are you kidding me? They're so much richer and full with... I mean, I never played Monkey Island with the PC speaker. My first introduction to the Monkey Island music was the CD audio version, and I remember hooking my headphones into my single speed external CD-ROM drive.
I remember doing that, man,
because I didn't have speakers, and I remember listening, and it was like the build up, and then right before it starts, it does this cymbal crash that you would only hear like in like exotic Caribbean getaway cruise commercials or whatever, and I was like, wow, this is so cool, and the tune forever got ingrained into my head. I mean, The CD audio version is a bit, now listening to it, it's a bit silly because it's very, very synthy and it's very, you know.
Dude, are you kidding me?
I mean, especially compared to like the special edition with the live instruments and everything. But
oh, you can't compare it to that. It was
no. It was if you take the graphics out away from the special editions. I've said many times, I like hearing the music, you know, live. I think it works a lot better. Anyway, this is very off topic.
Do you know what's weird for me? You know, Transport Tycoon recently, well, it's Locomotion, but it recently got done for Android, and John Broomhall, the original composer, actually redid the music with live instrumentation, and I was chatting to him about it on Twitter, and he actually said he's hoping to do like a live performance of it.
There you go.
And I was like, dude, that's amazing. And I've played enough of the tablet version now that my brother came to visit me when I was at lunch the other day, and he was at lunch, and he kind of had Groove Shark going on his phone, and he was playing like old CD music, and he was old computer game music, and getting me to guess what games they were from, like Sims. I missed out on the SimCity 3000 one, which is weird because I love that soundtrack, but you know, I got like the Command and Conquer song he played, and I got the Transport Tycoon one within like half a second because I know that soundtrack incredibly well, but. It was really weird for me going back and listening to the MIDI versions now after having listened to the live versions and really, you know, having them stuck in my head. Now going back, the MIDI version sounds so cute and like kind of adorably 90s to me.
Yeah. Well, that's how it works. I love hearing live instrumentated, just sure. I love hearing live versions of classic
Yeah, good tunes with the old MIDI melodies turned into actual instruments.
Exactly, performed with live instruments. I love covers of things. That's why I love like video games live, hearing that sort of thing. Which is kind of a shame that like when video games live does like, I don't know, more recent games which already have like full orchestrations.
Who cares?
It's not as exciting. But when they do like, you know, Mario Brothers or something, it's like, yeah! You know what thing is? Have you heard the covers, the ragtime covers of Super Mario Brothers 2?
Yes.
Those are amazing. Because they are. I mean, they're very ragtimey.
Yeah.
Do you know, as is. I have to say,
like, because we spent all those years playing with, like, PC Speaker and, like, MIDI soundtracks and stuff like that. Do you remember the first game which had music which really blew you away? Was yours Grim Fandango?
The soundtrack that really blew me away, like, oh, I can't. Yeah, well, Grim Fandango, I remember that came with the soundtrack CD, which I still have.
Yeah.
And I listened to it before I played the game. And I was like, man, I feel like I'm listening to a jazz CD. Like, how is this a computer game?
Is that the first soundtrack that really made you, like, with, like, just go, man, this is something, this is beyond just, like, a game soundtrack. This is something else.
Yeah, probably.
It's funny because mine was a LucasArts one as well. It was Outlaws.
Oh, well, and there you
go. Oh, that's such a great soundtrack, man. And that
came
like this was the good old days when they came with like the soundtrack CD as a second disc.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's such a great soundtrack.
Although before, LucasArts
did good work.
Yeah, I think before that, I was pretty impressed with The Dig because, I mean.
Yeah, of course.
I didn't have the soundtrack. I have the soundtrack now. Even though it's pretty. It has some live instruments. But, man, I remember reading in The Adventurer about like how Michael Land was composing and like, you know, it showed him with like a timpani and he was like, you know, doing that stuff. And I was like, oh, that's so cool. And it
that
said about,
true.
Yeah. And then after I played The Dig, it was like, oh, the music is based on Wagner. And it's like from this CD. And I actually bought the CD of Wagner.
Wow.
To listen to it.
That's pretty nerdy.
Yeah, I know. It was like a double CD. And I think maybe like, two tracks were kind of similar to The Dig, but it wasn't. And I was like, well
he
not going to listen to that
concepts.
Again. Oh, yeah, no, of course he did. I'm sure he did. Mm-hmm. There were some bits that were like, oh, okay, yeah. It wasn't like a direct lift or anything. But, yeah, so I kind of bought the CD hoping to hear music from The Dig, and I was just like, oh, well, this is Wagner. Never mind.
Well, if you wanted Wagner in an old game, you should have bought Cryo's Ring, which is their sci-fi adaptation of the Nibelung story.
Oh.
You shouldn't play it. It's awful.
Okay.
Ooh. Absolutely awful.
Speaking of awful games, I've watched I am in the process of watching one, but I watched one before, Retsuperei. Are you familiar with Retsuperei?
I'm not, but you said it the other day, and I thought you were just being a weird xenophobic creep and left it at that.
No, they're the ones who are the weird xenophobic creeps.
Okay. Oh, this, I'm worried now. This doesn't sound like it's in good taste.
No, are you familiar with Mystery Science Theater 3000 or Riff Tracks?
I am.
Or that sort of thing? Okay, so basically what these guys do, it's two guys usually, and what they do is they find long plays of games on YouTube, which means, you know, it's Let's Plays but without commentary already. Just, you know, just people playing the game. And
someone playing a game.
Right, and just the whole audio. It's not anyone commenting on it. And what they do is they basically watch and they provide their commentary on the game and stuff like that. And they're called Retsuperei.
Sounds very gimmicky and awful, but also kind of funny.
It's not gimmicky or awful. It's just like, it's like if you and I started just like watching a game and being like, oh, look at this. What's
this?
I
can't watch games. I gotta play them.
Okay, well, if it's like, it's like if you and I were playing a game in the same room and recording a commentary about them. Except these guys don't play.
That sounds extremely ill-advised, I gotta say.
Maybe we should... Oh, no! My tablet!
I just bought a new... I just ordered a new tablet online, man. Don't you go with the same route.
If I had a dollar... If I had a dollar for every time I knocked over my tablet accidentally, I'd have about $20. Anyway.
Wow.
I know.
I had no idea the streets of New York were paved with such gold.
Anyway, I've been watching the Retsuperei of Darkseid and Darkseid 2.
Oh, yes, you told me.
Man, those are some awful, awful games. What
also,
I love...
Also, I just want to point out that I just quoted Icewind Dale 2. It took me a minute to remember what game I was quoting. Anyway, continue.
What was the quote?
When I, the streets of...
Oh, right.
Thing of paper such gold. Yeah, anyway, sorry, continue.
Oh, no, I watched Darkseid 1, and it was terrible. But it was funny, because apparently it's one of those games where you have to, like... It's very much trial and error, and if you die, you have to start all over again. But there's only... Mm-hmm. There's certain things that you would only know to do or not do if you tried to do or not do them and died. Kind of like that.
Yeah, but that's Dusk Gaming. That was...
Yeah, but, like, yeah. You were infuriated in Leisure Suit Larry 2 by the bobby pin puzzle.
Yeah, but I was more infuriated by everything else. You know, that obviously, they were making fun of themselves for that. It was all the other bits where they were actually taking it seriously when it was just a pile of shit.
Yeah, well, Darkseid seems to be the same. Anyway, the guy played through the game knowing what to do and getting everything right without dying in, like, less than an hour. So.
Sure.
Yeah.
And well, Darkseid, dude, you can play through Day of the Tentacle in, like, no time at all.
Yeah, sure, you can play through Day of the Tentacle in, like, an hour and a half or something like that. Or less. I don't know. Anyway, the point is, it's a terrible game. And it's funny because the guy who designed it, Mike Dawson, is the main character. And he modeled and did the voice acting for the main character. And I just find that hilarious because that's a silly thing to do, speaking from experience.
Now,
and
you
the funniest thing
from experience,
I am.
Do we want to go into detail on this? Or
nope. Now, moving on to Darkseid 2... Mike Dawson had nothing to do with Darkseid 2, and yet the protagonist is still Mike Dawson. It's just someone else playing him, and he's dressed up to look like him because he has a mullet and a mustache, so he dressed up to look like him. And his voice acting is so pathetic. And, like, the whole plot of Darkseid 1 was just like, oh, they've implanted an alien embryo into your brain. You need to get rid of it in 3 days. And so he travels into the dark world, and, like, it's... Kind of, it's silly, but at least it's like, okay, it's something. But this second game, like, you wake up and he's like, oh no, my girlfriend is dead. Like, the sheriff comes in and he's like, hey, we're investigating the murder of this Rita lady. And he's like, oh no, Rita was my girlfriend. But then as you progress, it turns out that Rita wasn't actually his girlfriend. It was just, like, some lady that he was infatuated with. And she was, like, sleeping with everybody else in the town and, like... He's suspect number one.
Man, it seems like every weird 90s point-and-click adventure, like all the weird ones, were all took place in like this weird town in the middle of nowhere.
It reminds me a lot of Harvester, but...
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. And you know what those both remind me of is Diamonds in the Rough, the AGS game.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You've got like this weird town full of creepy people. That seems like a...
That's exactly what it is. It's a weird town full of creepy people. Everybody in the town is weird. And then, like, they just all sit around instead of, like, actively investigating the murder or whatever. They just kind of sit back. And the sheriff's just like, well, whenever you feel like confessing, I'll be here.
Best and, like, sheriff ever.
I know. And then, like, the guy is just going around, and instead of, like, trying to clear his name or whatever, he's going to the carnival and, like, failing at ring toss and...
Yes.
And the Wheel of Fortune and, like, the Mirror Maze. Man. And, oh, man, it's
the
so
bad.
The
90s was such a weird time.
I know. And then the problem, too, with the Retroprey is that whoever played the game, I guess, didn't know what they were doing, or they wanted to be very thorough, so there's these long pauses where I guess they're, like, checking a walkthrough or something. Or they give up and they just, like, go back and talk to every single character again and ask them the exact same things all over again. So this
That's how you play adventure games, dude.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's kind of like... I was watching a Let's Play of I forget what, and the person was just like completely clueless, and I felt like just screaming at them.
Well, that's
because it's
that's
frustrating.
A blind Let's Play,
yeah, it's frustrating when like it seems like the solution is obvious to everyone but the player. But anyway,
but it also annoys me if I'm watching a Let's Play and the person's obviously just read a walkthrough and there's no logical progression.
Oh, well, yeah.
They don't.
Yeah.
They're never working anything out. It's just like, oh yeah, now I have to give this guy the thing.
But I mean,
you know,
even
it's like, oh, this isn't how you play games.
Well, but yeah, but I mean, it removes you from playing the game anyway.
Walkthrough, so I guess it's...
And you're by all accounts would mean that you're anti Let's Play because why watch that anyway?
Yeah, well, I can play it. Anyway. Continue. Sorry.
Oh no, I'm done. We've been talking crap for half an hour. We should probably get into the meat and potatoes.
I got more crap to talk.
Oh, okay.
Do you know what game I've played recently? Well, the demo of?
What?
A Russian first-person shooter called Mad Space, which our friend Anatoly, very kindly sent me the demo of. And I gotta say, I knew it was weird going in, but it's even better now that I actually played it. Like, it's a tough game. I played it on normal difficulty going, you know, I've played a lot of first person shooters. I'm good enough that I can do it. And I got my ass handed to me in like 2 minutes or something like that. But, you know, I persevered and I figured it out. It's really weird. First of all, it's got non-Euclidean geometry, which, you know, is easy to talk about because it's so crazy. Basically, nothing in the world is as it seemed. Like, you'll turn around a corner, and where you think there should have been a wall, there'll be a hallway continuing. It breaks the sense of reality and distorts your sense of geometry being a real thing, which I've actually seen... our mutual mate Macca doing AGS, you know, he built a first person thing. I don't know if he ever showed you, but
I don't think so.
It was pretty cool. It was non-Euclidean, and you could, like, you come around the corner and where there should have been a wall, there's a doorway that leads into a hall, which somehow I'm pretty sure it's all done with teleport trickery, because that's, you know, a pretty nice way of doing it. But as far as I can tell, I've never tried building one before, but, you know, it's cool to see that in a game. And it's cool to see other things, like you've got a weapon in each hand and you choose which one to shoot with the left and right mouse buttons, so you can have like a long range weapon ready and a short range weapon, and, you know, and shoot according to what's come around the corner. And I've only ever seen that done in one other game, which is Advent Rising, which was, you know, 10 years later. Mm. Or 8 years later after that game or something like that. So, you know, so it's really cool for me to, you know, I love first-person shooters from the 90s, and I love seeing these kind of obscure games. And I'd heard Anatoly speaking about it on his podcast, which you should check out, by the way. Go onto Google and search for the DOS Nostalgia podcast. You can Google it now that we use that as a verb.
Or you can go to DOSNostalgia.com if you...
You can.
Cut out the middle.
It's a good podcast. We've had a lot of our buddies have been on there. Chris Olsen,
yeah.
Brian. I've been on there twice because my time going on there was me giggling about how much I like Doom. And you know, which is, if that's a worthwhile podcast experience to you, then check it out.
Who hasn't been on that podcast?
You.
That's right. Anatoly.
You've been planning to go on there, haven't you? You were going to talk about...
I've been talking about going on that podcast with Anatoly since, like, last October or something.
Get on there. Just go, oi, listen up here.
I don't know. I don't know. I kind of feel like my like when I was talking about the single speed external CD-ROM, I feel like that's a part of my old DOS nerd history that's buried deep inside me that I need to come to grips with.
Let it run free.
Yeah. Okay.
So yeah. Anyway. So yeah. It's really cool of Anatoly to have sent me that. I really enjoyed playing it. You know, I played through the demo and I actually had a great time. I love weird old first person shooters from the DOS era, like, you know, Eradicator and Hacks and stuff like that, which no one remembers any of these games, and it's fantastic to find like the one person in the world that remembers them and be like, you know, obviously there's more than one person, but you know, within my sort of social circle online, and be like, you know, and basically what I'm trying to say is everyone should play Strife. But anyway,
all roads lead to Strife.
All roads will always lead to Strife. You know this. Anyway, we've got a topic to talk about.
Yeah. Yes, we do.
We do. We do have a topic. I can't remember who requested this topic. Who was it?
I don't remember. Was it a request? Yeah, it was a request. It was a request. I think it might have either been Stuart Poddington or someone else.
Okay, well, whoever it was, thank you for your request.
Yeah, you probably requested it like 3 months ago, but I don't remember.
We're finally here.
Yes, here we are. So the topic is coding. Yay! My favorite. I say quite sarcastically.
How do you enjoy coding?
I do not enjoy coding one bit. Coding?
I gotta say this. It's always amusing to me if we're Skyping and it's a coding day for you.
Yeah.
Because I'm actually... During this week, I was animating something complicated for Techno Babylon, and you were like, "Oh, dude, do you wanna? Let me call you up on Skype." And I was like, "Dude, finish your coding first, because if I'm concentrating, the constant ranting is just too much."
That's why you said that.
I'm like, I can't do my animation while you're going,
Well, if we Skype while I'm coding, you're usually treated to a delightful stream of consciousness. Rant and swearing when my things don't go as they plan, but
it's
actually
usually
that,
not that happy.
No, it's usually not. But that day, I actually gave up on my on what I was trying to do because it was very clear from the start that I wasn't going to be able to do it as I wanted it. And even if I had been able to pull it off, I realized that I wouldn't be able to do it. It wouldn't work as I wanted it. So I gave up. Anyway. Coding is not one of my favorite... It's my least favorite part of game design because I'm just no good at it. I can understand the basic functions of AGS. I mean, I've been using the program for over 10 years.
You've been using it for a long time. You're one of the old-school guys, man.
Yeah, I've been using it since back in the DOS days when you had to use graphical scripts and stuff. But
yeah.
I'm one of these people who, if it wasn't quite apparent by now, I'm kind of a creature of habit. I always order the same sandwich at Subway.
You really are, which is endearing to me, even though I pick on you about it constantly.
I know. You always like bringing up the example of Subway, even though I don't always order the same sandwich at Subway. You weirdo. Anyway, I'm very much a person who likes comfort and being set in my ways. Not to say that I won't try anything new, because I will. It just sometimes it takes me a little longer than others to try new things, especially with issues like coding. Like, if I've learned how to code certain things and I'm comfortable doing them, and say a new version of AGS comes out which completely rebuilds everything I've learned and I have to dedicate time to learning new stuff, well, then I may not switch and upgrade to that new version of AGS for a while. Certainly not before I've finished the game I'm currently working on.
Which is why
I was using 2.72 for such a long time before upgrading to 3.
What an awful version to stick to.
I know. I'm not hubristic. I can say that I appreciated the innovations in the new versions of AGS, and I thought, gee, I should have done this a long time ago. Why didn't I?
Yeah.
Every single time I upgraded. But there was a learning curve, and I had to learn.
Yet there always will be, yeah.
And yeah, so I don't like that. Even now, like, I am so happy. You have no idea how happy I am that despite the new audio system in 3.2, the old commands still work, because there are certain things that you can't really do with the new audio system anymore that you can still do, or that don't work as well with the new version that worked perfectly with the old audio system. So, yes, and someone's car is getting broken.
It's a convenient Camelon, but we'll ignore, hopefully.
Yes. Yeah. So, anyway, what would you like to say about this while I mute myself?
We should get into the nitty-gritty of coding in AGS, because AGS is really, you know, that's what the big blue cut program is all about.
Yes, exactly.
And AGS is really easy to use from a coder's sort of level, because it's a high-level language that you use. You know, for those unfamiliar with the sort of terminology, low-level is when you're, like, programming really in either machine code or assembly.
Oh, my God, are you kidding me?
Sorry.
You got car alarms, you got phones.
I'm so professional. Anyway.
My phone's on mute because I don't trust someone won't call me at like midnight. But
I just muted.
But yeah, so AGS is a very high level language, which means a lot of the stuff, the complex nitty gritty, is taken care of for us. You know, and it's object oriented, which is, you know, it's really nice to build games with. You never have to do beyond the really basic stuff. All the stuff like even stuff like objects, characters, you know, inventory items, that they're all set in arrays for you. You don't need to handle any of that.
They didn't used to be though.
No, well, I'm talking about the version that our listeners are going to be using, except for Podge.
Yeah.
Who probably still uses 2.6 or whatever. Play Barn Runner. It's a good series.
2.6.
So you know, we've got this really high level language which is really suited to people like yourself, for instance, who are designer writers. Is AGS the first time you started coding?
Yep.
Yeah, see, I learned in BASIC and I had to do a lot of the stuff myself in BASIC, which, you know, I'm not saying BASIC is low level, but it's lower level than AGS.
Well, and I made a text adventure in BASIC way back when, and I say made, but actually all I did was just I had a subscription to 321 Contact magazine.
Oh, yeah.
And they used to copied have the code, yeah. Yeah, I copied the code, but
yeah.
I mean, so I gained some low level understanding of how it worked.
Yeah, I learned on TI BASIC, which was on a graphics calculator, which was crazy because you had to select all of your commands for your functions from a list, which seems ridiculous to me now.
So you were one of those people in math class who programmed Tetris and everyone was like, oh, hey, here's my calculator, program Tetris on it.
Well, see, the TI-83... Yeah. That we used had a link feature. You could send your programs to people, and I did.
Okay. Yeah,
I remember very clearly being in calculus class, and they learn us how to build an array on our calculators. And as soon as we did that, I started failing calculus because I just took the array and learnt to build like little dungeons with it, and you could walk around these. That was me in calculus was building. I passed like only just passed calculus because that's all I spent the year doing.
The kid in my calculator, I didn't have calculus. It was IB math. But anyway, the kid in my math class who everyone went to get games on their TI-83s was called Amar Patel.
Okay, well, I was that guy. I was, yeah.
You were the Amar Patel of Meriden in high school.
And so when I got to AGS, you know, suddenly everything was really quick because I'd spent all this time like programming by selecting commands from a list in AGS. It's even got an autocomplete feature. You know, if you've got a bug, you know, if you've done a line wrong, it tells you which line the error's on a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So AGS is really friendly to use compared to pretty much anything else, and it really suits the writer designer. But there's still quite a bit of stuff, like a lot of basic stuff that I think you should know as a coder. And I'm going to start getting to stuff that I've talked to you about before. The first one is format your code.
Well, I think this is an interesting discussion to have because you have a lot more coding experience than I do. I've come from the experience of, like I said, AGS was my first real coding thing, so I've kind of picked little things up. There's still things I don't know how to do and things that are still impressive to me, which I have to come running to you to help me with sometimes. But, yes, anyway, go ahead. Format your code. Yes, that was something I didn't learn until very recently.
Yeah, it wasn't. And it's really, I can't imagine not formatting my code, because, you know, I was coding on a goddamn calculator, you know, so everything was really messy. So as soon as I got to a computer and I could do this formatting and make it neat, you know, all of a sudden I could have these scripts which all look nice and neat and everything in a row. And when you're looking for a bug and everything is indented properly and everything's commented properly and everything's, you know, laid out in the right way, it's so much easier. And a lot of the times in AGS, when you're just doing a basic adventure game, you don't have to code anything. But when you start coding interesting stuff, or you're trying to add little functionalities to the engine that it doesn't support inherently, you're going to start getting into some more complex code. And you might have, you know, several hundred lines of code to dig through to try and look for an error or, you know, something that you want to adjust. And if you haven't named your variables properly, if you haven't formatted everything so it's in an easy-to-read format, you wouldn't write an essay, you wouldn't write a book in a format that's hard to read. And you got to remember that coding is called a language for a reason.
Unless you know, it's James a set of Joyce.
Well, he's weird. And dead. So what?
And he really liked farts.
He really, really liked farts. That's weird. But
oh, that's rich coming from you.
I'm a man, all right.
And so,
So it's very important, especially for me. If I write code nowadays, it's usually either for you or like for Dave or someone. You know. It's usually for someone else, so I need to make sure that my code is totally understandable to someone else just putting it into their game, and maybe they want to change one of the facets of something. You know, they might want to change one variable, and they don't want to have... What was that?
What was what?
There was a big hiss.
Oh, sorry, I didn't realize my microphone was at the top of my laptop, so I was running my fingers along the top to dust it. I thought you had just...
Yes. Okay. No.
That was me hissing in anger at the concept of coding.
Probably no one in the pod. No one will hear it on the podcast.
No, they won't.
So there's this need for code to be very understandable for other people using it. You know, if I give you a piece of code, you might want to use it in 3 months' time down the track, and you might look at it and just go, "Ben, what the hell were you doing here?" You know, and it's the same for me. I know. If I've got a good piece of code, I always try and write it so it's portable. You know, all the variables are contained within that bit of code. And that way you can just pull it out of one project and plug it straight into another project, and it works every time. So code formatting is super, super important. And I feel also that portability is fairly important, you know. Why write the same thing 10 times if you can do it once, do it properly, and it's always done? You know,
I think a really important rule of thumb in coding, and this has happened to me several times, is it's very easy to overthink your code and make things a lot more complex than they need to be. And I'll give you a perfect example of something that I just fixed and consolidated the other day. Because it can be really easy to think of something, and you know, if it's a slightly more complex thing than just basic adventure game stuff, I guess. Then
walking around using items and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Because, I mean, that's pretty much... that AGS can pretty much handle that for you. Just, you know...
Yeah, that comes with...
Exactly. But I had a function where I wanted to make the environment a little bit richer in a room by having a car pass by at certain intervals. So I used timers. And I know timers are outdated and terrible because you can only assign them numbers and not names. But sometimes they're a little bit easier to use than just having a variable that you subtract from. Anyway, so I have this code where I have a car passing by. The function basically says, you know, if the car is at this, once the car finishes its trajectory, start this function again, which is called car pass, just as an example. And the function basically says, okay, well, when the timer is expired, or actually, no, there's two variables, because there's car pass, which is just the function, and then there's also car time. So car time basically is to set different intervals, different set, so the car doesn't pass the same time every time. See, this is right, already so it's getting...
random.
Right, it's a random. So I have a random variable with three different settings. So, you know, if it's one, then set the timer for this length, etc. If it's two, set it for this other length, etc., etc., etc. So that in itself was fine. But then I had this other one called car color, which, you know, I didn't want the same car to come by. So I had three different graphics for the cars. One's red, one's black, one's blue. But I had three separate objects, three separate car objects in the
room. Oh, really?
Yes. So this is a perfect example of overcomplicating things.
Yeah, absolutely.
I had three separate objects, and I would call each object, you know, with its corresponding color. So, you know, if the if random was one, then it would be black, or if it was two, red, etc. And then that object would go by. So I realized, you know, this is too complex. Why do I need to have three separate objects? I can just have one and then change its graphic. So that's exactly what I did. I went back in and I cleaned up the code a little bit. And rather than have three separate objects that I had to call three separate times, I just called the object and had it move, you know, once. And then just according to what the color was, just changed the graphic of it. And it made things so much easier. I mean, it wasn't something that would have, you know, messed anything up or anything. It's just, it's a lot cleaner, and it makes your code go from being, you know, 20 lines to, say, 10.
Yeah. I think this is a reason why you should read the manual, why you should know all your functions. You should, you know. A really good tip, a lot of the code that I learned is from just, like, whatever language you're using in the AGS. Go into the technical forums and read when people are having problems. And I read the tech forums all the time because you'll always learn stuff, you know, someone will have a problem or someone will try and do something and you can go, oh, you know, I understand now how to overcome that or how to achieve that. And it's about knowing functionalities and knowing stuff. I was recently talking to one of our listeners, Rizulka, Natalie, and she's you know, working on one of her first projects in AGS, and she was talking about she had 30 something variables for conversations, keeping track of different stuff. And she says to me, Ben, there's got to be an easier way. I don't want to have 34 separate variables or whatever it was. And I said to her, this is in a case like this, you know, this is why we use an array, which is one sort of variable with different indexes, and you can keep track of, with a single array, you can keep track of 34 different instances of a single variable, you know? So knowing that, you know, if you've never used one before or you've never read about them, you don't know that that's what you need for, and I've probably explained them really badly, so sorry to any computer science students out there. But yeah, if you've never used an array before in your life, you're never going to have this knowledge of why I should use it. And I remember when arrays were being explained to me by Michael Rittenhouse, Monkey0506, I'm going, well, how do I use this in a game? And it wasn't, I think like 2 weeks later, I'd already put one in a game, you know, like that. So, and you use arrays all the time in your objects and characters and stuff. You just don't realize it. So knowing that, knowing your functions, knowing what sort of, you know, capabilities the engine has is really important for just saving yourself time, you know. And once you learn to do things like, once you learn actual basic coding when you're building your own functions to call at later points in the game, you know, that sort of thing. Once you start to get that, that's when you're really empowered and you can actually start building a game, not just making a standard AGS thing, you know.
I mean, as soon as I come up with a concept of something that's a little bit out of my reach to code, the first place I go is the AGS forums, and I search through the tech forums, because chances are there's someone who's already thought of something very similar.
Absolutely. And also know the functionality, like know the capabilities of your engine. I know I was talking to Edmundo recently, and he wanted to code a flashlight, and he was getting me to talk him through some of the direct draw functions, which I don't think he'd used before. And I said to him, you know, why are you doing all this when you can do the same thing with a single sprite with an alpha channel? Mm. You know, it's so much quicker. And he said to me, he said, oh, I didn't think the engine would be able to handle it. Which is true, because I remember when Bernie made Reactor 09 and the introduction had like alpha channel things moving, and it would slow my computer down at the time. Mm-hmm. But now that, you know, we've got a totally different renderer now, you know, so everything's direct 3D, and it just handles it, you know, way better than it ever did. And now you can just do that and not worry about it, you know. So it helps to not be stuck in the old way of, you know, and the way that, and I said to him, I'm like, man, if you just use the sprite with an alpha channel, this is so much quicker than all the direct draw nonsense, you know?
I'll be honest, anything that has to do with dynamic sprites or draw surface or anything is still completely foreign.
Yeah, they're a little weird to get used to. They're not entirely intuitive, but once you get used to them, they're fine.
Like your reflection code and all that stuff, wouldn't even know where to begin.
Although all of the fancy stuff that I've coded, like when I do like the chalk drawing simulation or magnifying glass or anything like that, all of that, you need to use those functions to get any of that to work. So, you know, any visual effect, you know, start investigating your drawing surface functions.
Yeah.
So those are both examples of like, in Edmundo's case, it was the fact that he's been using this engine for so long that he wasn't fully aware of the new capabilities of the current version. And in Nat's case, it's someone who hasn't used those functions before and isn't sure what to do in a certain situation. So it's like, you know, whether you're new or old to the language you're using, it really pays to sort of keep reading on it, keep seeing what other people do, keep experimenting. A lot of the stuff when I'm trying to code stuff is me just experimenting with things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I remember you saying to me one day, you were like, oh, I wonder how people code the glass refracting. Was it in Toonstruck?
No, it was in Freddy Farkas.
In Freddy Farkas. You said that to me, and I kind of had that sitting in the back of my head, and I'm like, how did they code that? How would I code that? And I remember going to hang out my laundry, and it just kind of hit me. I'm like, oh, dude, I totally know how I'd do that. And that was interesting, because I coded that and got it working perfectly, but the way I got it working perfectly, it relied on the direct draw driver in order to do it properly. And I went to show it to Dave Gilbert, went, oh, hey, I've coded glass refracting. And, of course, he couldn't run it because DirectDraw, a lot of Windows 7 and Windows 8 computers don't support that.
Right.
So I had to completely strip everything out and recode it from scratch so it would work with Direct3D. So remember always there's another way of coding things. You know, you might think you're doing it the best way. But I think a good point to bring up is something I heard Jonathan Blow talking about in a speech. And I'm not a huge Jonathan Blow fanboy or anything like that, but he made a really good point in a speech where he was talking about coding, and it reminds me, I was talking to Ryan Timothy. I'm really name-dropping AGS people.
You really are, yes.
But it helps to tie it to real-world examples, you know? And Ryan Timothy was, I think he was coding in Turbo Pascal at the time, and he was saying every time he makes a function that he's going to use once, he turns it into a complete function that he can call later in the script and, you know, just in case he ever needs to use it again. And I was like, oh, that's an interesting way of doing it. And Jonathan Blow was saying, I think he worked on some ports for Doom, if I remember correctly, and he was saying like, oh, man, why didn't they do that in Doom? You know, it's John Carmack. You know, why? What sort of noob is he, you know? And he said after sort of years of coding, it finally hit him that sometimes you're never going to use that again, and it's actually quicker and more efficient rather than creating this whole new function for something that you're going to create once. Just do it in that one iteration, you know? Don't overcomplicate. It's really easy to have, like, these really sort of dogmatic approaches to script where you have to write a function if you even just use it once and then call that function later on when you actually need it. But that's not always the timeliest way of doing it. And especially when you're working on a game by yourself, every minute counts, and every minute you're not coding is, you know, every 1 minute you're quicker to finishing the game. So don't overcomplicate stuff like that by giving yourself these really nasty sort of guidelines to stick by if they're unnecessary. Don't overcomplicate stuff.
Yeah, and another important thing to remember is, especially if you don't have much experience, is that things are not going to work a lot of the time, and you're going to get frustrated, and you're going to swear, and you're going to swear at your friends online sometimes.
It's okay, I forgive you. I forgive.
I wasn't asking for your forgiveness.
Well, you've got it. Take it.
Thank you. I'll put it in my in my pocket and save it for a rainy day or something. Yeah. When I'm hungry. What the hell am I talking about?
Anyway, I have no idea.
Neither do I. Anyway, you're going to get frustrated, it's going to get annoying, and you're going to want to give up. But I think the best thing to do in those instances, I can't talk, is take a step back, relax, come back to it later, do something else, and ask for help if you need it. And just, I mean, the AGS community is good in that there's a lot of really talented and helpful people who
there are.
Will help you with your issues. And, yeah. You know, you help people all the time. I've helped people with coding as much, as limited as I can, my help is. But, yeah, so...
Stop putting yourself down so much.
Well, I mean, I can't help anyone with when it comes to dynamic sprites. I can help people with the basics of AGS, but
sure,
nothing too complex.
With the nuts and bolts of the system, which is still very important.
Sure, yeah. So if you're listening to this and you're a complete AGS newbie and you don't know what's going on and you need some help, well, read the manual, first of all, because the manual is very important.
It's actually really well written. Chris Jones has done a great job on the manual and the people who update it. So, yes. Yeah.
But if there's still something that you're still not getting, you know, and you can add Ben and I to Skype and you can or Twitter or whatever. You know how to get in touch with us. You can ask us for help. We'll be happy to help.
Hmm.
At least I'll be happy to help. I don't know about you.
I'm a grumpy old man in my robe and my pajamas. But also, I think it's important to highlight another aspect of coding, which I think is extremely essential. And it's essential when learning anything. But it's really, you know, if you're coding something new, take an iterative approach, you know. I was talking to one of my little cousins recently. He's 16 years old, and he wants to be an indie game designer, which is really weird to me. That's what he wants to be when he grows up, you know.
Well, the lady that I talked to about, the PR lady at Coral Gables, when I told her about all this, she was like, oh, my son wants to be a game developer too. And I was like, what is this? It's like the new...
It's the new thing.
Yeah. It's like
you know, Minecraft is a thing. It's it's really weird to me. There was no such word as indie games when I was like a 16-year-old. You know, it was because that's how people made games. You know, you look at like I was just listening to the Another World podcast, as I said, and you listen to it was one guy sitting in his bedroom in France making a game. That's how games were made.
Look at all that shareware stuff, like Hugo's House of Horrors and all that stuff. It was just
Don't bring up that game. Don't bring up anything, because I get flashbacks of Nightmare 3D.
Let's not talk about Nightmare 3D, but Hugo's House of Horrors is an important game to talk about.
Oh, boy.
As is Hugo 2 with the painting that's only 2 frames.
Yes! We talked about that in, like, our second ever or first ever podcast.
Yeah, probably. Anyway.
But, yeah, So it's really weird to me that he wants to be, like, that's what he wants to be. He wants to be an indie game designer. He wants to make Minecraft 2 or something like that, you know. It was always Mario with him, and now it's Minecraft, so, you know. I remember it was really funny, like, one day him and his sister were there, and they're like, oh, do you know who made Minecraft? And I was like, oh, yeah, it was Marcus Pearson. And they're like, it's Pearson! Like I'd said, like, George Harrington was a member of the Beatles or something, like, really angrily correcting me. I love that. I think that's hilarious.
Minecraft is, like, the least indie game now.
Well, I know.
I know it
started... But that's the thing.
Yeah, I know.
That's the thing. You have to... It needs something like that to make the kids aware this is what you can do, you know?
Damn kids!
And it's... I think it's fantastic that kids feel empowered, because when I was in high school, you know, I was like, oh, I'm never going to make games. I'm too dumb. Who can make a game, you know?
Oh.
I can't draw, I can't code, I can't write, I can't design, I can't do any of that shit.
Then what the hell were you doing in school?
Me?
Yeah.
I was just sad.
Oh.
I was like this sad, like, blob of, like, misery.
You were...
That's so not true.
You were a goth.
I was. I had my goth period. I had my dark time. I listened to, like, shit music.
You smoked matches and you hung out.
Oh, man, I remember when I watched American Beauty. I remember there's an orgy poster. There's the album cover of Orgy's Candy Ass poster on the wall. Album on the wall. And I was like, oh, man, this takes me back. I love that album. I listened to it so much. I'm such a freak. But anyway, what I was saying is about the iterative approach. Man, I got sidetracked by fond memories and kids. is you know, he was asking me, he was like, oh man, I want to start making a game, but I don't know where to start. I said, well, it's easy. I said, start from step one. I said, get your thing, get your program, your compiler, whatever you're using. I think he wants to use Unity, which is a really wise choice, I think. And I said, make a square appear on the screen. I said, if you can do that, that's step one. I said, next, make it so the square moves, you know. After that, make it so it's you that moves the square. After that, give the square graphics. After that, give the square animation. You know, it's one step at a time. When I'm coding something new, it's always one step at a time. Put in a line of code, test out, make sure that line works, then move to the next line of code. If you're putting in 30 new lines of code at once that you've never written before in your life, and something's breaking, how the hell do you know which line's breaking?
Well, you know? AGS at least has the
But even if it all compiles happily and doesn't give you an error, it might not work.
Oh yeah, no, it might still not. It might still not work.
You know,
but AGS, exactly. If it crashes the game, AGS will indicate what line crashed it. So at least it gives you kind of an idea of where to start hunting for your bugs.
True, true. But what if nothing just shows up?
Well, that's true. Yeah, then you have to.
What do you do? You know, so I always code like that. If I'm coding something new, a lot of the times in AGS, you're just retreading old ground that you've had some experience with before. And in most coding languages, I'm sure it's the same.
Yeah.
But if you're doing something brand new, take it a line at a time. You know, it's the same when you're learning a guitar part. It's the same with anything, you know. Take it one little bit at a time, one step at a time. Once it all comes together, it'll work happily. And you're not trying to dig through 70 lines of code going, there's a million places this could be going wrong.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's really important for me. I've always made it a rule, if I'm learning something new, take it really simple. Basics. Think in step-by-step phases. Don't try and do it all at once. Crawl before you can walk.
I like walking and then crawling.
Yeah, well, that's because you walk to the bar, then you drink, then you get home.
Wah-wah.
Wah-wah. so I think
what was that?
I don't know. I can't talk anymore. It's 2:30 in the morning. What do you want from me?
I want you to go to sleep.
I need to go to the dentist.
Why?
2:30.
Oh my god.
I'm an old man. I'm allowed to make crap jokes.
You're not an old man. I'm the old man.
You are. Sorry, grandpa. So yeah, I would say coding, those are the things to remember, you know. Don't be afraid to ask for help. Make sure you read the documentation, learn the language, you know, find out what the language can do.
See.
Format your code nicely so you can, you know, come back to it in 6 months' time, know what the hell you're going on about.
Well, actually, let me chime in on that for a little bit. If you know, it's kind of like, you know how some people write really terribly and you can't understand their handwriting, but they're like, oh, I understand my own handwriting. Or they...
Yeah.
They... Yeah. If it's something that is complex, I would say, yeah, follow that advice and make it clean so you know what's going on just in case you come back to it later. But if you're just working on the project solo and you're the only one that's coding and it's not too complex, I mean, it's good to get into the habit of cleaning up your code and indenting and using camel case and all that stuff just for in the event that you work on a project with other people in the future. Like, you know, I've always had really messy code. I never started indenting until recently. I mean, but I'm going to be working with you very soon, and out of courtesy to you, I need to indent the code, and just ease of use as well, not just courtesy, but
yeah,
you know,
that's
we're both going to be, you know, working, tinkering under the hood, so to speak. So you need to be consistent with your other
teammates. I'll say this. Your code may work fine when it's messy. That's cool, whatever. A real coder will always indent his code properly.
Yeah.
A proper coder, you know, anyone that's really serious about it will always format their code neatly.
Sure.
I don't care, you know. If you're not formatting your code properly, then you're missing an absolutely fundamental step in the process of coding. And it is, I'm fully serious. You should just format. It's just a thing you should do, you know. It's like putting your seatbelt on in the car. It's just something you do. You shouldn't even think about it. It's eating your veggies. It's going for, you know, getting exercise. It's just something you got to do. It's part of your life. It leads to a happy, healthy life.
I like how you've just named seatbelt, eating your vegetables, and exercising. Those are three things that people should do, but a lot of people don't.
Which is why I named them, because they're just like, they're optional things that you think like,
Well, my mind is blown.
I did this on purpose. You know, visit your grandma. Do the normal things in life that you should do.
Mm-hmm.
So, So yeah, that's my, you know, and if you come in on a project, you know, if you ask someone to help you with a function, I hate it if someone gives me code to look at and like, hey, help me with this, I need help, and it's not formatted properly. I'm just like, I don't feel like wading through this crap. If you can't be bothered to format it properly, why should I be bothered to help you? You know, it's step one. So yeah, it's okay. I heard you. It's okay to it's okay to format messily if you're by yourself and you like learning. No, it's not. No, learn it. You know, it's a fundamental. You know, it's like having. It's yeah. You got to do it.
Yeah, so, just yeah. It's a bad habit you need to break.
It's a really bad habit, you know. And I've got heaps of bad habits in art and heaps of bad habits when I play guitar and stuff like that. Mm. And I wish I didn't have them. I wish I'd taken it more seriously when I was learning. Mm. So it honestly takes so little effort to format code properly. It's not even funny.
Mm.
You know. So yeah, honestly, just do it. Be a good kid.
Yeah. Say your eat your veggies. Say your prayers.
Eat your veggies. Put your seatbelt on. Format your goddamn code.
Yeah. Go outside and get some fresh air and run around the block, you fat ass.
Yeah. Because in your case, you know, in my case, I format code like that without thinking about it. It's just a habitual thing, which is how it should be. You know, in your case, you got to think about it now.
Yeah. Exactly.
And if you sort of just spent 5 minutes learning to do it when you first start off. I realize that AGS may not have had the same code formatting functionality that it does now when you started.
It certainly didn't.
But you know, now it's got it. It's time to learn.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anything else we need to cover?
Our asses, by telling everyone to say to follow us on Twitter. If you like DOS games, you should follow BCT_podcast. Because in addition to getting the latest news on when we have new episodes out, sometimes, now that you know the password, you'll get a lot of DOS screenshots.
Yeah.
If you'd like to follow us individually, I am at Grunislav Games, all one word.
And I am at Ben_304, I think.
Yes, you are. And you'll get lots more DOS screenshots if you follow
me. You'll get a fair few DOS screenshots if you follow me. I like DOS games. But you'll also get, like, I tweet a lot. So be warned, if you follow me on the Twitters, I tweet a lot.
I don't tweet as much, but I tweet a lot lately about my game, which, if you're sick of hearing about it, you shouldn't follow me.
You don't care.
And I also tweet about lots of inane things.
It's an essential step.
Yeah, I know. But then again, who doesn't tweet about inane things? Isn't that generally what Twitter's all about?
We're on a podcast and we're talking about inane things. What's the difference?
You're absolutely right. So
that's the flavor of life. That's the spice of our existence, Francisco.
Okay, Ben. I believe you. Now, let's fly off into the sunset as we sprinkle fairy dust on the listeners and put them to sleep.
Honestly.
What?
I gotta call something out. If you fly off into a sunset, if you're flying towards a sunset, you're eventually going to get to the point where the sun's not setting and it's actually day.
Yeah.
So we can't fly off into the sunset.
No, if you're flying off into the sunset, you're flying west because the sun sets in the west.
Yeah. And if you get there, then there will be day.
Well, you're not going to fly faster than the sun sets.
How long does it take to get around the world on an airplane?
Quite a while.
How long? 24 hours?
I don't know. That's a good question. Maybe we should ask...
Probably, I reckon you could catch up. We should ask Chris Olsen. Chris!
Chris Olsen.
If you're listening, could you catch the sun?
I don't think you could, because if you have like a flight from New York to Los Angeles, and it's like, you know, the flight sets out at 8 p.m. and the sun is starting to set in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And the flight takes 6 hours, so you would get to Los Angeles at 9, 10, 11, 12, 1, 2 a.m. New York time, which is 11 p.m. Los Angeles time. The sun's already set at 11 p.m.
Okay. So, I suppose if I think like Melbourne to Perth, we're talking 3 hours, and it's a two-hour time difference.
It only takes 3 hours to get from Melbourne to Perth?
Yeah, last time I flew it. I think it depends which way you go because of the wind.
Well, yeah, but it takes 5 hours to get from Perth to Sydney. Sydney's
it takes
not...
It takes 5 hours to get from Brisbane to Perth. I think you got to fly on an angle.
Okay.
For that. Well, but yeah, no, last time I flew to Melbourne, I think it was 3 hours and then 3.5 or 4 hours on the way back.
I guess Melbourne's just a bit more westernly in than Sydney.
It's also further down than Sydney, so yeah. It's less of an... And you fly a different route, I believe.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, yeah.
Why did we get into...
I don't know, I'm curious. If you had like a fast enough plane, anyway.
Concorde, maybe you could.
Sorry.
But no one flies on the Concorde anymore.
No, people don't care about flying fast.
No.
Probably because it costs a lot to run them.
Well, plus the Concorde was notoriously uncomfortable.
Was it?
Yeah, they sacrificed speed for comfort. You could get from New York to London in like 2 hours, but it was miserable.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. I'm always miserable on planes because of my long legs. Not miserable, but it's like, you know. I gotta make sure I stretch my legs out and everything like that.
I get uncomfortable on planes if I don't stretch out for a long period of time. It's just the way of planes.
Just the way they are, yeah.
They're terrible. Anyway!
We should make it... I seriously think they should do like a plane with like bunk beds so you can just lie down and have like, you know, four people stacked high on beds to the roof. That'd be fantastic.
They have beds on planes, but you have to fly first class or business to get them.
No, but I mean like that should be just the seats. They just strap you into a bed and you just like... you know, and play DOS games in your bed.
That would be amazing.
It would be pretty excellent. Anyway, we've gotten distracted. I'm sorry.
Oh, you're not.
I'm in a distracted mood tonight.
That's fine. Anyway, thank you for listening. We'll be back.
Next,
we have a very special episode next because it's our 50th episode.
It is. That's a lot of episodes.
That is a lot of episodes.
Have we actually said anything between like the 50 hours?
It's more than 50 hours because some of the podcasts are more than an hour.
But some are shorter as well.
That's true.
So have we said anything at all like worthwhile?
I don't know.
If you distilled them into their purest fact form, would there be, like, more than 10 minutes?
Probably not.
I doubt it.
I doubt it, too. But anyway, keep an ear out, because if all goes to plan, we will have a special guest on next week's podcast.
I love special guests.
I do, too. Because it means I don't have to talk as much.
Oh!
I hate talking! I didn't realize we'd come to this. You know what I hate, Bubba?
Tell me now, Cletus.
This podcast.